So maybe you do most of your adventuring via the TV. Maybe you've spent some time on the final frontier. You may even consider yourself a Trekkie. If so, how's your Klingon?
That's one word with a whole bunch of endings that means they are preparing us for honorable suicide already in progress.
Erica Okrent achieved only passable fluency in Klingon. Her Starfleet ambitions are pretty limited. In the real world, she's a linguist and the author of a book called In the Land of Invented Languages, Esperanto Rockstars, Klingon Poets, Logian Lovers, and the Mad Dreamers Who Tried to Build a Perfect Language. She says what makes Klingon tricky is the way it compounds words.
Klingon is very complicated in that it uses lots of endings to stick on words to form complex sentences. So you can have a long one-word sentence.
One of the things I think is fascinating about Klingon is that it does manage to sound as though the FCC should disapprove of it, even
yes,
while saying something ordinary.
Yes, it was designed in order to be appropriate to the, what you might call, Klingon culture, which is very crude and rough and warrior-focused. So when the producers of the third Star Trek movie hired a linguist named Mark Okrand to create the language, the idea was that he would create something that would fit this culture. And so he picked all the sounds that were the most sort of aggressive sounding, which is the ch and the ka and lots of forceful sounds that you will hear in natural languages, but never all together in one language.
What's curious about this, and it's an interesting way for you to begin, this is a language that was invented for one single purpose. It was supposed to recreate on screen the sound of a culture that really was only supposed to exist on screen, and it sort of burgeoned. That's not like the rest of the languages that you have looked at in the Land of Invented Languages. The rest of them were more intentional and intended to be real languages. How did you get interested in Klingon?
Well, Klingon was interesting to me because it did catch on, which was very unusual in the history of language invention. This has been going on for at least 900 years. People taking a look at natural language and saying, oh, it's got all these ambiguities, these irregularities, all these problems, words that mean more than one thing, two words that mean the same thing. Why can't we control this, have a nice, perfect, regular, logical, unambiguous language, and then the whole world will want to speak it and we'll all understand each other? And people have been trying to accomplish this for hundreds of years and not accomplishing it. They'll invent the language, but no one wants to speak it.
I think the answer to them always seems to be, don't we have enough languages as it is?
Yes. Yes, but no perfect ones. And I suppose we still don't, because they haven't caught on. But instead, people want to speak Klingon, which is not regular or perfect or unambiguous at all. It's rather more like a messy natural language. I guess that's what people want.
Well, that's the essence of the natural languages, isn't it? None of them were intentional. None of them came about because somebody wanted to speak beautifully or to speak logically or speak intelligently. They just sort of happened.
Yes, they're organic products. They grow up from people communicating with each other, and there's no one person in control when this happens. So everyone contributes a little, and it becomes a thing on its own. So we all invent language together, but no one's in control of the process.
So what happens when somebody does decide that they want to create a language? These are intelligent people. They've looked at the problems. They've seen what the difficulties are. Where do they start to bog down?
Well, in the idea that people will love my language or want my language because of the properties that the language has, when really people don't choose to speak languages for practical reasons. They're not out there comparison shopping for the best language. They speak languages to join a culture of people that also speak that language. So people don't necessarily want a perfect language, which is something many of the language inventors have overlooked or not thought through to the end.
Oh, we should say you're a linguist. You've studied languages. But you got interested because you love the way people communicate. The question, I guess, is what do you think of these efforts that have tried to make sense of what everybody does?
Well, I was interested in it originally because as a linguist, I found these projects sort of insulting. It's sort of presumptuous to think, you know, we linguists barely know how language works. It's an ongoing science and we're always learning new things. For someone to sit down and say, you know what, I'm going to sit down and make a perfect language presumes a lot of knowledge that as a linguist, you know, we really don't have about the essence of language and how it works. And it's sort of like someone, if you're a vision biologist and someone came to you and said, you know what, I'm going to invent a new eyeball and you're going to be able to see through walls and see around corners and it'll be really great. You know, I think it'll take me maybe a year, but then I'll probably win the Nobel Prize for it. You know, that you would take offense at that. That's sort of how it sounds to a linguist. So I started off feeling sort of offended by it, but then just got drawn in by the personal stories of the language inventors and the passion that they put behind it, the years of effort. And they sort of won me over in their dedication to the project and their own way of expressing a love for language.
That is the glory of it, isn't it? It's these stories of people. And I suppose the logical thing to do is talk about some of them. John Wilkins, for instance, maybe because he created the language of truth. Boy, that sounds like the one that everybody ought to speak if they could.
Yeah, that's a very ambitious project, a language in which we could only speak the truth or that would reveal the true nature of things. And every word in his language is composed out of pieces that added together form the concept in a sort of mathematical way. And in order to do this, he had to create this 600-page chart of every concept in the universe and how each concept related to the others and how they should be represented by words exactly. He spent his whole life on this, and it actually burned up in the Great Fire of London, and he had to do it all over again. And after he finished with it, it wasn't much longer for the world, and most people forgot about it.
I have to confess that I looked at the partial charts you have in your book, In the Land of Invented Languages, and it made no sense to me whatsoever. it wasn't that he wasn't telling the truth. It was just that I couldn't figure it out.
Well, that's one problem. If you want to make your language so exact and mathematical that when you speak a word, you will speak an exact concept, it's too hard to say anything. We don't know exactly what we're going to say when we're going to say it, and we don't think in perfect concept, so you have to dig through these charts and find the right letters, and clearly this is not a good communication tool, whatever its other merits.